This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Young Wealth Show, where you'll truly learn how to make, spend, and invest money for an awesome life. Get the real-life stuff that wasn't part of your school curriculum. Young Wealth gives you innovative new ways of dealing with your finances, as well as the skills and tools you're going to need to survive and be successful out on your own. Let the Young Wealth Show be your GPS to take you from clueless to clued in. Here's your host, Jason Hartman, with Young Wealth.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Dan Martell to the show. He is the founder of SaaS Academy Software as a Service. Dan, welcome. How are you doing?
Hey, Jason. I'm doing amazing, man. How are you doing?
Good stuff. So you're coming to us from your home in the East Coast of Canada. Just got back from spending the summer in San Diego, I guess, or the winter, I should say, in San Diego.
The winter there. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I'm Canadian, you know, adopted American, spend a lot of time in San Francisco. Okay. Just love traveling.
Good stuff. Me too. Just got back from China myself. So SaaS companies are all the rage, I'd say. You know, everybody loves monthly recurring revenue. Just had John Warlow on the show. And, you know, there's obviously huge opportunities here. And you have some big clients and a great following, you know, putting out different information online and so forth. What is sort of the special sauce, if you will, that helps these companies really grow and achieve great results?
It's kind of a big question in the sense that there's a lot of things, right? So like I coach the founders of ClickFunnels, Carrot.com, Proposify.com, TimeDoctor.com. I mean, and then a ton, you know, Gray's Cart. I mean, like all these vertical niche SaaS companies, mostly bootstrapped, but 30% funded, you know? So like the way I think about it is there's kind of four core pillars to really perfect to get to scale. First one is attract. So we need to make sure that we build a demand generation process. Second is convert, which is creating a sales conversion process. Third is expand, which is all about strategic product roadmap. So we can create expansion revenue. And then fourth is scale, which is all about building the operating system for their business so that they can create an executive leadership team that knows how to grow the company. So those, I'd say, are four major areas that need attention. And then obviously there's a ton of strategies and processes to deploy to get really big wins.
Right. Well, first it comes with an idea, you know, either acquiring a SaaS business or creating one from scratch, from the ground up. Where do you see the opportunities in the sort of that initial stage of ideation, if you will?
Yeah.
You know, it's getting so micro defined. I mean, things are getting so vertical.
Yeah. No, and I think that's the opportunity. I mean, the cool part is, you know, somebody asked me the other day, well, you know, it must have been easier in the early days of the internet to find a good idea. And the truth is that there's never been more opportunity. And the reason why is because with every level of new innovation, it unlocks another set of problems, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody once asked me, you know, what's your purpose in life? And my answer is to leave the world with a better set of problems, mm-hmm. right? Because if I give and contribute and help other founders and keep, you know, creating cool things, it'll solve this level of problems and kind of create another opportunity. And so when I see things like exponential technologies, like, you know, drones and Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and 3D printing and, you know, whatever, staff on demand, each one of these just unlocks like another level of software and solutions that need to be built to manage these things. So the cool part is from an ideas point of view, there's no lack of it. In regards to how you validate that, I think that's where a lot of people make a ton of mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you want me to dive into that or other areas, but...
That would be great if you want to unpack that a little bit. So ideas all around us, obviously, but validating and proof of concept,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so one of my core principles is a thing called Amiibo versus an MVP. So you hear minimum viable product all the time. The challenge I have with that term is it's got the word product in it. And I think that too often people build way too much before they ever truly validate. So a minimum economical viable offer, Amiibo, is essentially that. It's defining the problem in the offer and how it could be solved, and then trying to find early adopters that'll pre-buy the solution, right? And what I mean by that is there's this great framework called the technology adoption curve by Jeffrey Moore. Mm-hmm. And on it, he talks about, you know, early adopters, innovators, early majority, you know, laggards and late majority. A lot of people try to validate their idea with non-early adopters, right? And then they either try to sell it and they try to change the product every time they sell it so that essentially they get 10 orders, but they have to add 10 new features just to get those customers to buy, right? Or they try to sell, they don't actually do customer development. So, or they sell, they try to approach non-early adopters and get negative signals in the market and the opportunity. I mean, at the end of the day, in Eastern Canada here, there's 100,000 people in my hometown. If I was building innovation for restaurants, I'm pretty sure none of the restaurants in my hometown have been awarded as most innovative restaurants. So me validating my restaurant software with any of those restaurants would not be a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And that's just an example of what I see people do all the time with their software ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so distinguish that a little bit more. I mean, you know, I really enjoyed the Lean Startup. Eric Ries has, I think, done some great work in them. I'm not sure if he coined the MVP idea or not. Maybe that came from someone else, but he certainly popularized it a bit. So it's the MVP versus, say that again?
The MEVO, the Minimum Economic Viable Offer.
Okay, so just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so Eric was actually, you know, he's an old friend. He was a formal advisor to my company, Clarity. So, you know, I think I saw Eric speak as his first time he ever gave a talk. It was at the Web 2.0 Summit on the Lean Startup. So I actually worked with him on a framework around lean product development. And I'm not sure if he coined it either, the MVP term, yeah. Definitely popularized it. But even he would admit that in his examples, it's not about creating working product, it's about simulating product, mm-hmm. right? And simulating the work. So what I teach instead is people should create clickable prototypes. And in the world of today where we have tools like Envision App and UX Pin and Balsamic, you can pretty much prototype software where it almost looks like real working work software, mm-hmm. right? Without any code.
Okay.
If you can do that, then using that as the offer, the sales presentation, then you want to go and try to find people to pre-buy, right? Going to find an engineering team to build it before you sell it is where you waste a lot of time and energy because mm-hmm. there's nothing more expensive than building something that nobody wants.
Right.
It's the most expensive cost. So to me, I'd rather build enough of a prototype. I've used Keynote in the past to prototype ideas mm-hmm. and then just try to go find the buyers and really learn from the market. You know, there was a book called The 4 Steps to the Epiphany that Steve Blank wrote that really Steve was Eric's mentor. He was his professor at Berkeley. And he's the one that really explains like customer development is about learning, not selling, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of nuances there, but I just think that that's like a high level idea. It's like, what's the minimum we have to put together to validate an idea? And let's do that.
Mm-hmm. So where does that handoff occur where you go from that prototyping? I mean, can you really iterate from that? Or is that just to find more if there's like a market at all that would be interested?
It's both.
Yeah.
Yeah. You first try to figure out the market and then from there you can iterate, but you have to do iterations in the proper steps. So where people make the mistake is they show the prototype. The person says, I'd like it, but you have to add this feature and they get the order. Okay. Mm-hmm. What Steve Blank argues in 4 Steps of the Epiphany is very clear. Outline the product, go try and talk to customers to get 10 orders. If you don't, then come back, change the product, go back out, try to get 10 orders, right? Don't change the product in between sales conversations.
Mm-hmm. And are you charging for those 10 orders? I mean, you are, right?
That's 100%. You want to take the money. And, okay. And if you decide not to build it, you give the money back.
Right. Okay. Good.
Yeah. So I call that early adopter program. Like, for example, one of my clients that I coached was Ryan Levesque from the Ask Method.
Right.
And Ryan built a product called Bucket. So he's my SaaS Academy program. Mm-hmm. You know, he created what we call the Founder Circle.
Okay.
Right. The Founder Circle was essentially the early adopters that are willing to buy, you know, on spec the first version of Bucket. And that became the capital that funded the first version development that built the model to eventually scale up to the company where they're at today, which is crushing it.
Uh-huh. So that's awesome. Yeah, Ryan does good stuff. Is there any kind of outline, or I'm sure there is some kind of guideline for what those budgets should be? You know, you do this prototype that costs you basically nothing, right? Or almost nothing. Or if it costs something, like share with us what that looks like if you can. And then what is your first I guess even you'd call that an MVP, or is that the Mevo still?
No, that would probably be an MVP once you build it. You really don't want to spend any money on the clickable prototype. Mm-hmm. At most, $1,000, right, yeah, to hire a designer to put some wireframes together. But, mm-hmm, you know, usually what you want to do is you want to make sure that you spec the features so that you can get it built with your early adopter funding, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is, like, how many people do you think you could get to buy it? What would you need to price it at? Get them to prepay upfront for a year, and then use that capital to essentially build the first prototype. So it could be 10 grand, it could be 30 grand, it could be 100 grand.
Okay.
Right?
All depends what it is, right? Of course.
Yeah. But I still think, like, if you're spending more than 50 grand, then you probably spec it too big and too wide.
Okay. That's interesting. So here's the magic question. What if you want to offer something for free, or even if it should be free? I mean, there's a lot of free stuff out there that, and, you know, companies that give away free stuff do sell for nice infinite multiples, right? Sometimes.
Yeah. So here's the thing is free works in consumer. Uh-huh. It doesn't work in B2B that well. And typically free is a distribution decision, not a pricing decision.
Okay.
So what I would say is, charge at first and build validation and, mm-hmm, get true customer validation. And at any point, you can make it free.
Okay.
But for you to think you understand, there's a lot of stuff. If people search my YouTube channel, I have about 3 or 4 videos on the freemium business model. There's a lot of characteristics that need to be true for freemium to work. And freemium is a marketing decision, not a pricing decision.
Okay. Can you share some of those things that need to be true for freemium to work?
Yeah, it's the incremental cost of a customer has to be close to zero.
Okay.
So you can't have a high cost. If every customer costs me $6 in server storage space or whatever, then freemium is nearly impossible,
okay,
right?
Yep.
There needs to be the ability to have a network effect where the total potential audience is in the hundreds of millions.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, a Slack makes sense, or Dropbox makes sense, yeah, or
Facebook.
You know, WhatsApp. Typically you see freemium and B2B around communication platforms.
Yeah, WhatsApp. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. But in consumer, it might work. But I mean, even Evernote's struggling with their business model right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of it,
yeah,
up front. I think,
okay,
you should charge for what you create. And if you choose in the future, like MailChimp did, MailChimp for almost a decade was no free. And they understood their unit economics, and they realized there was a whole segment of the market they could probably approach and create kind of top of funnel, more demand, mm-hmm, and proved to be a good experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. Would you consider something that is maybe free to the consumer, for example, but has some ancillary revenue? I mean, the most common being advertising, but that's not very creative. But
no,
some other...
Like, I mean, in that space, I have a coaching client that does this in their platform. And one that I think is worth looking at is Wave Accounting. So
okay.
Wave does this where technically it's free to use their accounting software. They monetize by add-on third-party solutions, mm-hmm, and transaction fees if you happen to do any kind of payments through their platform. But for all intents and purposes, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could work, right? But, you know, typically, like, those things, like, again, consumer, like, you know, some of these social networks for, like, neighborhoods or condo units, et cetera, they use freemium, again, for distribution, and they'll monetize through ancillary services. I think that could work. I still think that if you're trying to validate your idea, you should charge for it and then choose to go free secondarily to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. You talked in the beginning of our chat today about wanting to leave the world with a better set of problems. I love that, by the way. People probably ask you all the time, what's hot? What's hot? What's the next big thing? You know, any
yeah,
thoughts on that?
I mean, going back to the exponential technologies, right? I mean, here's the thing, though, is if truly somebody's trying to follow something because they want to know what's the next hotness, then I think they're already at a disadvantage, because anybody that's ever made money in those markets, it's because they were just committed to the problem, right? So I really believe that you succeed in business because you fall in love with the problem, not the solution.
Mm.
So the solution is a byproduct of loving the problem. And if it just happens that drones, 3D printing, you know, cryptocurrency, AI, et cetera, is the right solution for that problem, then that's usually why you end up there and you potentially could be on to the next kind of internet size opportunity. But I just see too often people, you know, building the next Uber for, or Airbnb for, or, you know, Slack for, or Dropbox for X, it usually doesn't work out too well. Mm-hmm. I do think that if you've got an inclination or an expertise in those areas, then that's where I would be spending my time. Like if I were to start another company today, and the reason why is because high tides rise all boats, mm-hmm. right? If you get into a market and it's growing by 10% per year, you got to be really good to grow your business because the market as a whole isn't growing very much. But if it's growing 40% per year, like some of these industries, then you can be mediocre and do extremely well, mm-hmm. right? Because if you grow 25% year over year, you're going to double every 3 years. So that's what I would say is, regardless of where what you're interested in or kind of what's hot, find markets that are in growth mode. Mm-hmm. And that could be in existing industries, right? Government regulation changes markets. Geographies are markets. So like, I would say, and that was the advice I got from one of my mentors, this guy named Ken Nickerson. He just said, you know, find a growth market and, you know, you'll do great because you're good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right. So that's what I've done ever since.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Is the SaaS world, when you have such a platform like the internet, it seems to lead to this sort of winner take all kind of climate where the big players just get big, you know, because of the scale they have. Is it a winner take all world or can new entrants come in and disrupt? I mean, you look at like, you know, you mentioned Dropbox a few minutes ago. Then you look at yeah. Box or even Google Drive, right? Give us your thoughts on the winner take all kind of concept.
I mean, it's rare, even in the tech space, that the biggest companies stay the biggest companies long term, mm-hmm. right? So we forget about the days of NetSuite or Netscape or EEA or like there's all these technology companies that, you know, man, Cold Fusion as a technology. Like there's all these, right? There's all these little technologies that don't exist. So like it's rare for us to have a Facebook and an Amazon, et cetera.
Yeah, or MySpace.
Yeah, it's not impossible, but it's just the things that need to be true. That's why I think Zuckerberg is an incredible entrepreneur because he was smart enough to see Instagram and grab that and WhatsApp. And those were more like firewall decisions to create a moat than, you know, strategic decisions because if anybody's going to disrupt Facebook, it's going to be a communication platform, mm-hmm. right? So it's really just self-preservation at that point. Mm-hmm. But the cool part is there's just so much opportunity. I mean, literally, you can build a, you know, really great 25 million ARR SaaS business in a lot of different markets and do really well. And, you know, average gross margin in SaaS is 87%. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a great business. That's why the valuations are so high, right?
Yeah, sure.
Compared to other industries. And I just think the whole world's moving to more of a subscription economy anyway.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Everything we used to pay up front. And, you know, even like look at Uber and just fractional ownership of transportation.
Sure.
It's becoming these micro payments. And I think the world is moving away from ownership to rental and subscriptions. Mm-hmm. And I think that SaaS is just a part of that subscription economy when it comes to workflow tools.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was having that talk with someone just the other day about the SaaS model. I was actually kind of complaining that my companies are just getting soaked with subscription fees. But then I was remembering how it used to be that I used to buy Microsoft Office for $400 for every seat.
And dude, I remember the first server, I spent like 10 grand on the hardware.
Me too.
Maybe 8 grand on the software.
But not just that, the maintenance of having the guy come in all the time, you know, was constantly going down.
Yeah.
So really, Microsoft Office was a SaaS model, even though it was a disk, right? You know, because it was always being upgraded and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's an example of a monopoly no different than Google. They're very rare.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, one of the coolest companies that the big companies that made the transition is Adobe. Mm-hmm. I think like, you know, a lot of people are going to follow Adobe's model because the markets are also rewarding SaaS companies more and more, right?
Yeah. And interestingly, Adobe made it with very expensive, very complex software, a whole suite of it, you know, and they turned it into very expensive subscriptions. So that's, I mean, you know, for a solo person type thing, not like an Oracle B2B type subscription, but still kind of expensive. We got to wrap it up. But, you know, I thought we'd maybe wrap up, Dan, with just maybe a couple thoughts on execution. You know, once you've got this idea, you've done your iteration, how do you execute? How do you hire the programmers, the engineers? You know, of course, that's a giant question to wrap up with.
That's a huge question.
Just a couple thoughts on it.
I think that if you're just starting off, finding somebody and running them through a test project and making sure that they're qualified on Upwork.com is probably your best bet.
We use Upwork a lot.
Second to that would be finding a young programmer at a local community college and working with them to use your project as a school project. Mm-hmm. That would probably be number two. But other than that, you know, when we get into, you know, building what I call a talent pipeline and recruiting top engineering talent and kind of building out a development program and process, engineering process, that's a bigger challenge. But most people watching this could get away with one developer off Upwork or a talented, you know, passionate programmer from community college for near free. But, you know, free is free, man. It's free like a puppy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It comes with a lot of downsides and it's hard to keep motivated. And if they decide to change passions, you're going to be stuck with a bag of code that you don't know what to do with.
Sure, exactly. I must say, though, I'm kind of surprised you mentioned Upwork and not something more specialized than that, like some of the more specialized platforms.
I actually don't use any of them. So if there are more specialized platforms, like, I mean, I just feel like Upwork's got everything you could ever want.
Sure.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, if there's something out there that people feel is more developer focused, look at it. I'm a big fan of building teams, mm-hmm. and that means getting away from a lot of the contractor stuff. But in the early days, like I literally don't coach founders anymore that don't have product market fit. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like outside of my experience the last decade, really. So yeah. Don't
okay.
know.
Good stuff. Dan, give out your website.
Dan Martell, 2lsmartell.com, Instagram, YouTube. I've got one of the top YouTube channels for software entrepreneurs in the world. So you can go check me out on YouTube, publish every Monday, and share a lot of the behind the scenes on Instagram and have a lot of fun there with the family stuff. So if I can do anything to serve, just feel free to reach out. Love to help and appreciate the time, Jason.
Good stuff. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. A lot of valuable information here. Thanks for joining us.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.